Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Create Unknown. To unlock the ad-free extended version of this episode, sign up at patreon.com/thecreateunknown, and you'll get the rest of August 2019 for free. If you're listening to this and it's no longer August 2019, what's the future like? This episode is brought to you by Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/thecreateunknown to get a free audiobook and stay tuned for my book recommendation. That's audibletrial.com/thecreateunknown. Now on to the show. Welcome to the Create Unknown. I am Kevin Lieber. With me, as always, is Matthew Tabor. And YouTube's doing some things these days that are kind of changing the landscape, you know, and For those, sorry, I'm so sorry for doing that. For those listening, I have a latex Yoda that's actually Matt's that he did not know I was going to whip out in the middle of this recording. Been waiting all day for this.
And now your hand is going to smell. It's going to stink for like 5 days.
It's going to smell like 20-year-old latex.
Maybe you shouldn't put your hands in Yoda.
Maybe.
I don't know what you expect.
Maybe you shouldn't,
like.
But what's amazing is how rare and sought after and expensive this Yoda is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They used to be, I don't know, $25 range, something like that. And now they're on eBay for, you know, 200 without the tags, anything prime, perfect tags, everything like that is like $500 plus or minus. It's nuts.
$500?
Yeah, I saw two listed the other day, one at 400 and one at 600. And I was like, it's cool, but is it like $600 to put your hand in Yoda cool?
Well, I mean, it's all relative. I think some people would pay that. They'd buy it now. They'd pay that in an instant. I mean, if the market value is there, someone wants to put their hand in Yoda for $600. It's a good deal.
How much would you charge, though, if you just rented that experience? If it was like a 20-minute thing that you could do whatever with the Yoda doll for 20 minutes, how much is that going to run somebody? What would you charge for that?
Oh, my gosh. You could do whatever? Then how long is Yoda going to last if people are going to do, like, like, horrible things? It's like they'd have to just buy it at that point. I don't think you can. I guess you could hose it off. It is just rubber.
Yeah, I don't think Yoda's dishwasher safe, no.
All right, well, I apologize for completely derailing the introduction to this episode, but we do actually have something important that we want to talk about, and that is YouTube changing their policy on kind of everything in regards to what you can do, what you can't do, how to violate those policies. I mean, channels are just being mass deleted and demonetized. The whole channel can be demonetized or just strikes left and right for strange things. I swear I pop on Twitter every day and at least one YouTuber that I'm friends with that I know personally is having some serious issue and they're trying to get, you know, the @TeamYouTube Twitter's attention to solve it.
Right. And it's hard to know where to start because you're talking about all of these different problems. And they're radically different problems that seem to overlap too. So you have some issues that have to do with copyright violations. You have strikes on the content front. You have really strange rules being applied for the actual content itself, where people are getting videos deleted despite those videos just not being a problem. You have the suppression of certain kinds of content. Then you have all of that nuclear option stuff with the channel deletion, where people are losing channels completely, which we see through Twitter accounts like YouTube Graveyard. That's a bunch of people who highlight these problems and try to call attention on Twitter in the broader community, hoping that YouTube will take notice through the Team YouTube account or something like that, and then look into the problem. And that's, I mean, saying it's an inexact science is just doesn't even get to how impossible it is to get the right person's attention for the right issue in enough time. The whole thing is a massive, massive mess.
Now, I think that this all started with what was dubbed the Vox Adpocalypse, something that happened a few months ago. And I know that YouTube came out and they said that the Vox Adpocalypse had nothing to do with the policy changes and that these were going to be instituted anyway. But I mean, personally, I find it to be a heck of a coincidence that Vox Adpocalypse thing happened. And then within a few weeks, they all of a sudden roll out all these changes that seem to be really affecting a wide, wide swath of creators for a tremendous variety of reasons that I know that YouTube is working really hard to parse out and to fine-tune all of these flagging systems for these violations. But I don't know, man. It seems like the more regulations they're instituting, the harder it gets to create an algorithm that determines this is okay and this is not.
Yeah, and for anybody who's been under a YouTube rock for however long now, since June, I guess, that the Vox Adpocalypse scenario really started because Steven Crowder, who has edgy, at times offensive political comedy, right-wing kind of guy, was critical of Carlos Maza, who's a writer for Vox, or was until the other day. It seems like he and Vox are parting ways. And I stumble on that because I don't know the exact word to use. And YouTube doesn't know the exact word to use. Was he criticizing him in a comedic way? It was certainly offensive. Nobody disputed that the things he said were offensive. They absolutely were. Is that okay? YouTube doesn't seem sure. What's the difference between edgy criticism and offensive but comedic content and harassing another creator? And that's really when all these questions started popping up, and it seems like YouTube ramped up the efforts on all of these fronts, well beyond the issue that created this Vox Adpocalypse situation, right? So it's really tough to sort out. And when we were talking about what we wanted to talk about today, I'm thinking this is like untangling, you know, 85 knots, and you don't even know where to begin on it. And it really is just that many problems that cross over in ways that I honestly don't even think the people who work at YouTube understand.
I don't think so either. And it's hard for me to envision a way to untangle all of those knots with an algorithm when there are knots that are tangled that human beings cannot agree upon. So even though I agree with you that we could all, it was clear that while Steven Crowder was criticizing Carlos Maza's YouTube videos and he was commenting on them, which is covered under fair use, mm-hmm. he was also belittling him, and yeah. Carlos Maza was offended mm-hmm. and felt harassed. He felt like he was being specifically harassed and targeted. And so he essentially tried to rally the troops in his favor to go after YouTube for essentially allowing this to occur. And the problem is, like you said, I don't know how YouTube figures out what is criticism, what is commentary, what is harassment, what is playful ribbing. I mean, in this scenario with Steven Crowder and Carlos Maza, this same exact thing could theoretically, hypothetically occur between friends trolling each other, right?
Yeah.
Let's say hypothetically that Steven Crowder and Carlos Maza are actually really good friends, mm-hmm. which they're not. Mm-hmm. Let's make that clear. They're definitely not. This hypothetical.
They probably don't hang out, do they?
I don't think that they hang out. But hypothetically, two creators could be mocking and ribbing and being really offensive toward each other, but it could all be a big joke. And my point is, how would an algorithm ever be able to identify intent?
No, it wouldn't. It really can't. At least we're not even close to it. And Google has tried to do this for a long, long time. I mean, from the beginning, they've had massive teams of what they call human raters who rate content in a million different ways. I mean, that's a not a useful distinction here, but I mean, it can be everything. So it can be something like a human looking to make sure that given this search query, the top three websites on the page fit the intent of that search. You know, they have been doing that for a long, long time and having who knows how many humans actually review the results on that, then they can use those inputs to further refine the algorithm. But what do you do with the nuances of something like YouTube content? You could have two videos that were almost identical in terms of content, but the nuances and the characteristics of that situation, that relationship, are just radically different. I mean, I don't know, if I threw a bunch of insults at you, they might be inside jokes that are very funny, or the people who know us would find them funny, you know, and that's the way YouTube works, where something can be funny to a community of 5,000 people and appear to be a completely different thing to 500,000 others. Can you do that? I mean, not only can you not do that with an algorithm, but it takes a long, long time to do it as a human. You have to figure out all the components, all the relationships at play, how these different things play off from one another, and then make a judgment call that hopefully is well-informed enough to be accurate. This is brutally difficult, and they're trying to do it in an automated system with years and years of work at stake for a lot of people.
Exactly, because you can't just go by the words that people use because, yeah, I think inside jokes are a great example of that. Like, you can have an inside joke with your friends that, you know, uses words that everybody knows as something else. And I'm not talking mm-hmm. about hate speech or, like, clearly offensive words. I'm not talking about that. Just talking about because that's already part of the system, and that's an easy thing for an algorithm to figure out. You have a list of, you know, these are objectionable words that, you know, are not going to make it through our filter, and that totally makes sense. And I think everyone agrees with that. But yeah, like, you can have an inside joke with your friends that might seem really offensive. Mm-hmm. Because you're using the same words in a different way, though, that they all think is funny. But as an outsider, you're like, I don't get this.
Yeah.
That's a human thing. That's mm-hmm. that's not computer code. So we're going to get into a few specific channels that we've mm-hmm. seen affected in different ways, one of which was Vsauce 2.
Yeah, that's like, that's why I'm waiting. I'm going to say, so actually, let's start with how you had the hammer brought down on you. But I mean, we all had to expect that because Vsauce 2 is the edgiest, most offensive content on YouTube.
I almost spit my water out. I'm while you're talking, I'm taking a sip of water and I almost spit it all over the microphone. Just short-circuited the whole thing and killed the podcast. Well, here's the thing. For years, Vsauce 2 was dedicated to promoting other people. Mm-hmm. It shows like Mind Blow and Loot and FAQ and pretty much all of the shows. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I mean, if you're an old school Vsauce 2 fan, you'll be familiar with all these different shows that I have done BDP. Over the years. But they were BDP. That's the one that was slipping my mind. Yeah, BDP was probably the best example of a show that was just dedicated to promoting cool people. BDP stood for Build It, Draw It, Play It. It was three segments. Build It, I would highlight people who built really cool things, like a giant fire-breathing dragon robot. And then Play It, obviously, was music. And Draw It was, obviously, illustrations and paintings and that sort of thing. But essentially, I was going through the internet and curating highlights and turning it into, hopefully, an entertaining video. And a lot of the Vsauce 2 subscriber count was built upon those shows. But as a result of that programming, I would credit and link to absolutely everything that was showcased in an episode. So if it's an episode of Loot and it's a bunch of things, a bunch of wacky products that you could buy, I would link in the description where you could buy said product.
Right. And that's the point too, isn't it? That if you're going to highlight all these things, all these people, all these cool products, if somebody thinks it's awesome, they want to be able to follow it up and go see the thing or buy the thing or whatever. Like that has to be part of it, doesn't it?
It was totally the point and totally my impetus for making a show like BDP. The whole point of that show was that I love creators. If you couldn't tell by the existence of this podcast, I love creativity. I love creative people and I love celebrating that. And BDP was a show where I would find artists that I admired and would say, hey, go check out this person. They, you know, made a xylophone out of Lego and they played the Final Countdown on it and it was really cool. So go go watch their video, subscribe to them, whatever. That was the point of the show. Well, the point of this story is that recently, a few of the old links from those old videos, and we're talking like 5, 6, 7 years ago, okay? In subsequent years, that link has gone bad, and not gone bad in a way where it's like an error message or a 404. gone bad in like the adult content way.
18 plus and banned in some countries. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's an appropriate way of describing the links that once led to, you know, a product or somebody's website. They now lead to something that certain people would find objectionable. And certainly something that violates YouTube's terms of service.
So what you're saying is that Vsauce 2 became a porn site. Is that right?
A curator of adult content.
Vsauce 2 is about the curation of adult content. That's a great tagline. I'm like, it's exciting to see you shift your brand so hard into 2020.
It's really, you know, you don't know what it is. It's the unwilling curation of adult content. the accidental unwilling curation of adult content. So guess what? I don't monitor like 25 links in 300 videos that are 7 years old every single day. Yeah. That would be a full-time job and I don't do that.
It's not possible. It's not practical.
It's ridiculous, especially since a link can change into something nefarious in an instant. Like imagine I check all 300 videos, I mean, thousands of links at 9 a.m. each morning. And then by noon, one of them turns into something little Billy is not allowed to see.
It turns into a website where you can rent a Yoda doll for 20 minutes and do what you do.
Yeah. Yeah, your website. It turns into your website. So anyway, I found out that these links went bad because I got a warning from YouTube. And then I got a community strike from YouTube. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I can't upload videos to Vsauce 2 anymore. Mm-hmm. The channel is literally frozen. I couldn't upload a video if I wanted to. it's crippled because a few links in old videos now lead to your Yoda website. And let me tell you, I was very freaked out. I was very freaked out because I felt like at any moment another link could pop, could go bad. And now Vsauce 2 is gone. Just like that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
The one channel that YouTube is never going to have to worry about is Vsauce 2. I'd even worry about Ding more than I'd worry than Vsauce 2. You know, so it's just not ever going to be a real problem. But since no human was looking at this, you get the automated strike. And so two things. I want to back up really quickly because this was something that happened months ago. When you say that you can't upload, that's not current. It's not like you're barred from uploading now. This was, when did this occur?
It wasn't that long ago, actually. It was about a month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And it obviously it's been resolved. You know, I've uploaded since then. YouTube was great at handling it. And obviously I deleted the links and they removed the strikes and the channel is in good standing again. So that was an instance where something went bad. Before you get into that, I want to mention the fact that I talked to two different teams at YouTube, okay? And one of the teams told me, I kid you not, to go back through all of my old videos and delete all the links because I'm fully responsible for the content of them.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That's,
especially because when we were talking about how this could happen, there's a 99% chance that what happened is whatever domain was highlighted there expired. Somebody picked it up and used it for whatever purposes. So it wasn't even the person who owned that website originally who's done something wrong here. This is, and it certainly wasn't you, because you can't be held responsible for that, although it appears you can. But a completely unaffiliated somebody, nobody, whoever out there buys a domain and does something with it, and then it sets in motion what can become a serious problem. This is nuts. It's like my car insurance going up because somebody in like Abu Dhabi has an accident today. Like, this has nothing to do with my life. I didn't do anything wrong there, but I still have to pay the price. So it was really strange when all of that came in, and doubly strange that it wasn't a warning, because you'd think if you had a problem there, you'd get an email that said, we've identified X, Y, and Z that's wrong in this video. You have 24 hours to fix this, to clear it out, wipe it out, deal with this problem, or you get the strike, you get shut down, whatever the appropriate punishment is. That would make perfect sense because it would make people responsible for their links. It could be 12 hours. It could be 4 if they're concerned about that. Who knows? But you'd think that a creator would get an opportunity to fix a problem, even in a short window, before getting what's well beyond a slap on the wrist. You know, that's like a stake through the heart to get a channel shut down like that.
And that's what a lot of this comes down to, is just channels getting bludgeoned with a hammer when, you know, a scalpel would be a lot better. I'm glad that you mentioned Ding, though, because I didn't even think about this. The changing of the name of that channel folds into this discussion. That was the Dong channel. And for a long time, you know, we were told by YouTube that it wasn't a problem. And guess what? It definitely was. Like, it definitely was a problem. We changed it to Ding, and it made a difference. That's all I'll say. It did make a noticeable difference changing the name from Dong to Ding, even though Dong is like, that's such an innocuous, silly, it's not offensive. Like, that word is not going to get a child to have his mom shove a bar of soap in his mouth because he said Dong. Like, it's not on even close to the level. It's really not. Like, it's not close to the level of, you know, what's the kid's name from A Christmas Story? And he has to
Ralphie.
Says, fudge.
Yeah, Ralphie.
Yeah, little Ralphie having to eat the soap because he said the F word when he knocked over the screws or whatever, the bolts of his dad changing the tire on the car. It's, come on, Dong, really? And that shows you like the level of what we're dealing with. It's just gotten pretty ridiculous, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. And it's causing everyone's upset about this. I mean, YouTube right now has lawsuits from the LGBT community that filed.
Just this week it dropped.
And, yeah, just recently. And a right-wing channel, PragerU, also has a lawsuit against YouTube. Guess what? Both for the same thing, for suppressing their content in what they believe for, you know, reasons of their identity.
Mm-hmm. And whether it's even if it's not identity, it can be topics that that YouTube, for whatever reason, deems controversial with its advertisers, but isn't at all. And so I want to briefly allude to this because I think that we need to go really deep into it, like full episode deep. The channel Coffee Break, which is a video essay type channel, made some really good stuff. Most recently, had a huge video analyzing YouTube's trending tab and what went into that. For example, showing that in the United States, PewDiePie trended once in 2018, I think. Vsauce2 probably trended five times, which makes
PewDiePie. Who's that again? The by far biggest original creator in the history of YouTube trended once. Yep. That makes sense.
Except Vsauce2 trending four or five times that year makes you four or five times better than PewDiePie. Is that what you're saying?
right, yes.
But that's insane because it obviously doesn't reflect what people are really doing. So that was a video that was amazing and it didn't make the trending tab look good. That was okay, and it has a million views plus. I don't know the exact number, but it was definitely over a million the other day when I linked it to somebody. So Coffee Break does this video about vaping policy, really about public policy surrounding vaping, anti-smoking efforts. It was extremely nuanced, totally fair. There's no language in it that's objectionable. There's nothing controversial about it either. He analyzes what it means to have a product that is about harm reduction versus a full-on ban on something. And he really takes a difficult, nuanced topic and puts 12 minutes or whatever into it and makes a very good video. Now, based on all of his stats, based on how his other videos have been received, this should have been 500,000-600,000 views easy. The feedback on it, by the way, his community loves it. I watched it. I thought it was awesome. You know, I know we mentioned Nerd City on the last episode, but I'm going to do it again because he commented on one of Coffee Break's tweets saying this is the type of content that should be on YouTube. It's like the thinking man's content, but extremely fair. And that video got throttled to death. I mean, they suppressed the hell out of it because it had to do with the topic of smoking. You know, smoking is in the title. I guess that triggered it. I don't know. Who knows? But you can't even talk about public policy without taking a position. It's not like he was advocating for one thing over the other. he was describing a difficult public policy situation, and that video gets completely nuked. That's insane. That's why I think that we need to get him on here so he can go into serious detail about that, about trending, all that stuff. But it's a great example about, or it's a great example of making a good video that shouldn't get flagged, shouldn't get suppressed. And it's I don't even know the words for the way that is squeezed into zero.
I don't know either. I watched the video too. I couldn't, you know, lots of times you don't make it through all the way, some YouTube videos. Believe me, I made it through all of that. It was really compelling, and it was the type of kind of investigative journalism piece that you would expect to see on, like, I don't know, Dateline or something. Like, it was that level of objective. I felt like it was very objective. It was like presenting information. It was like, this happened and this happened. You know, here's some data backing up my claims and supporting it. And here are some, like, pretty tempered ideas of how we can maybe do this better. Because now, the way that we're doing it, you know, is not great. And it has to do with, like you said, with vaping and banning vaping. But meanwhile, vaping is really a great alternative to get heavy smokers, cigarette smokers, to quit, to transition away from smoking cigarettes, which is very unhealthy, to vaping, which is significantly less dangerous than smoking cigarettes. But yeah, like you said, that video was just kind of like, you know, stomped on the neck by the algorithm for whatever reason. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if it was just, well, this is about smoking, and we don't want to promote smoking because that will make us look bad. So we'll just put our thumb on the scales and make sure that nobody sees this, because it's better to suppress this than it is for it to, like, blow up. Even though, I mean, there is, I was reading recently, there are, like, cigarette review channels. Did you know about this?
Cigarette or vape review? But actual, like, tobacco, light the end and suck cigarette review channels.
Yeah, and I guess YouTube hates those a lot. Like, YouTube really hates these cigarette review channels, where I was just reading about it, and I haven't actually looked up any of these, but I'm super curious now. But yeah, supposedly, you know, it'll be, you know, Cigarette Champ 92 buys a new pack of, like, you know, Marlboro Extreme Purple Lightning or whatever. I don't know anything about cigarettes. And then, like, just smokes it and, like, reviews it as if you were reviewing a video game or, you know, the new Cheetos chicken sandwich from KFC.
I'm thinking of review bra, like, cracking open a pack of cigarettes and smoking them in his car and talking about it. Like, oh God.
Very seriously, like, talking about the different elements of the smoke. No, I mean, this is a real thing, and YouTube really doesn't like this, because it's completely, you know, glorifying cigarette smoking.
Right.
And they don't want to be involved in that. And, like, I get that. But meanwhile, a video that is well-researched and, like you said, nuanced, gets crushed along with it. And that's kind of like the hammer analogy that I think is apt. And I know that they're working hard to fine-tune all this stuff. But gosh, let me tell you, in the meantime, this is rough for so many, for kind of like everybody. I mean, I can't even think. Gus Johnson recently had a problem with a video. Grande has been, like, the people's champion of sticking up for creators. If you're not following Grande on Twitter, you know, you definitely should. Because he, not only is he hilarious, obviously, and has great memes, great Minecraft memes in particular, but he's really become an advocate for creators and stepped up to the plate in a way that I haven't seen a lot of people doing, at least not as consistently and prominently as he is.
I'm confident that within 3 years, he'll be termed Saint Grande of Malta, the patron saint of YouTubers. I think the church will confer that on him, and I think he's earned it.
I think so, too. He recently, the reason it's top of mind for me, because he recently highlighted this channel, Science File, Science File the AI, which is apparently over, you know, hopefully, hopefully by the time that this episode comes out, maybe there's been some resolution to the problem, but essentially, as of this recording, that channel is dead, and Science File the AI is no more because the channel got dropped from the network that it was a part of. So the network, which part of the pros of being in a network is that you have an added layer of protection from demonetization and flagging that you don't normally have. But Science File was flagged by YouTube as being a highly problematic, I don't know what word you would use. This is what it was. It was deemed high risk for violation. That was the word usage.
It's the equivalent of if you start dating somebody and all your friends are like, oh, this, I don't know what it is, but there's something, this is a bad move, bro. You shouldn't do this. We can't put our finger on it, but we've just got a bad feeling in our guts. And you're like, this is absurd. This is so stupid because I don't know of anything that's a red flag here. And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're not. But it really was like a gut feeling thing that turns into actual policy against this channel.
I love how everything is just going to become dating analogies.
That's like, all. This really is a dating site. Yeah.
The create unknown could be the date unknown. And it's a matchmaking service, actually.
That's right. Our Discord is one big single mingle.
Single mingle. Speed dating. Discord speed dating.
There's no good reason that channel should be wiped off the map, right? I mean, there was nothing compelling that stood out to you, right?
No. I know. Well, what they said, what Science File said in the, you know, farewell video was that it was the synthetic voice. Mm-hmm. So the whole point of Science File the AI is that this channel is a robot. It is an artificial intelligence. And it uses like a text-to-speech program for talking. So it's not a human being, you know, doing voiceover or being on camera. It's a robot. And they use text-to-speech programs so that it gives a voice to the robot. Like, that's the whole point of the channel. And apparently, text-to-voice or, you know, synthetic voice channels are largely deemed as spam by YouTube. Mm-hmm. Like spam picks that up and is like, oh, this is some like Russian bot or whatever trying to infiltrate YouTube. And
there are a lot of those,
though.
I mean, I clicked on a result. I was looking for something Vsauce 2 related. There was some topic we were talking about, and it was like, oh, has anybody done a video on that that we could link to, whatever it was. And I click on the thing, and it's just a bot reading the Wikipedia entry for whatever topic it is. And I'm thinking, that's genius. It's really cool that they did that, but this video sucks. So I get their intent that we want to do something about those kinds of channels, but it's not always like that. It's not always a scammy thing.
No, it's not some bizarre Chinese news YouTube channel that, like you said, it's just like ripping websites and Reddit and Wikipedia and turning it into videos like some sort of content farm. Yes, that happens. And yes, that's why YouTube deems this as spam. But here we have an instance where that's not the case here. This is a person's channel. It's very clever. It's very informative. It's beloved by the over 100,000 people, I believe, that subscribe to it. But now it's over, supposedly. You know, we'll see if Grande's highlighting this, you know, this error, this kind of tragedy, if that will help resolve the situation. I think we all hope that it does. But again, there's so much content on YouTube. What is it? Like hundreds of hours a minute are uploaded to YouTube. So in order to regulate and figure out what's okay and what's not okay, a lot of things are going to go wrong along the way. And it seems like right now, to me, more than ever before, a lot of things are going wrong for a lot of creators, and some of which get fixed and some of which don't. Mm-hmm. Picture this, if you will. You are swimming in the ocean and you finally feel free. You are floating amongst eternity, and that's what the ocean symbolizes. But you feel something tug at your leg, and you're like, oh my gosh, it's a great white shark. So you rip off the crucifix from around your neck, and you go to stab it in the eye like LL Cool J from Deep Blue Sea, and all of a sudden, surprise, it's an audiobook. What audiobook is it? Well, let me tell you what audiobook it is. It's a book by Temple Grandin called Animals Make Us Human. This is a book that I read for a video that I made called The Invention of Pets, and it's an amazing book. Let me tell you, Temple Grandin is an autistic woman who understands animals in a way that most people don't. She can recognize their body language because, you know, animals tell us things, or they tell each other things through their body language more so than their vocalizations. I mean, they use their vocalizations too, but their body language, let me tell you, is something else. And Temple Grandin can read their body language amazingly. And it's amazing to read about her particular insights. It's like a superpower. Seriously, I'm not kidding. Have you heard of Temple Grandin? She is a superhero. And Animals Make Us Human is a great book that you should listen to. And how do you do that? Well, you go to audibletrial.com/createunknown and you get that audiobook, and you listen to it and you learn. You get a free trial and you get to keep the audiobook. You know, satisfaction guaranteed, no questions asked. So just go to audibletrial.com/thecreateunknown and learn a thing or two about a real life superhero.
I was thinking this morning, actually, because last night I'm flipping through Freakonomics. Actually, I'm going to be very clear about this. Kevin, I'm about to demonetize this episode, okay? So get ready. I'm about to throttle and demonetize this one.
Here we go.
But such is the TC universe, right? So I'm looking through, I'm flipping through Freakonomics. Now, Freakonomics was extremely popular. How many years ago? A while. I forget when it came out, but it was for that year. It was like nonfiction book of the year. Like, this is the coolest thing in the world. And the premise of Freakonomics is really an economist who thought economics is a lot more than crunching numbers and comparing, you know, tables and data and all of this. It's like, no, it's about asking really hard, important questions about the world. And we often get those questions wrong. And that's a problem, because if we're trying to make something better or make a better decision, if we're asking the wrong questions, then what's the point? But he opens the book by talking about two or three examples in the introduction. It's before he goes into the case study. So like literal opening pages of this book. And one of them is about crime going down in the 1990s. So I know that half the audience is not from the U.S., and the other half was being born in the 1990s. Let me back up what it was like to be alive so many years ago. There was just this really weird paranoia about crime. Everybody thought, especially youth crime, was a serious problem. The numbers are going up. It's only going to get worse. Bill Clinton was all over this, saying that we're a couple years away from an epidemic. It was just hysteria about rising crime rates. We talked about it then with the urgency that global warming is talked about now. So what turned out to happen, though, is that the murder rates and crime rates, violent crime, all of that, just started to drop. And I mean, precipitously. It wasn't subtle. It wasn't like down 1% each year for 5 years. No, like it went like it halved in a very short period of time. In New York City, murders went from something like 2,400 a year to 500 a year. Like, this is a significant drop, right? So not only did this weird thing happen, but it's the exact opposite of what was predicted. The reason I'm bringing this up is that the author of Freakonomics, I think his name is Stephen Levitt, he said that all the experts were wrong because they were looking at kind of current data when, in his opinion, the correlation is with the Roe versus Wade abortion case having been resolved around 1972, the Supreme Court ruling on that legalized abortion in the United States. He says the women who were most likely go and get abortions were, I forget the metrics that he used, but it was essentially like people who grow up in these circumstances are a lot more likely to be criminals. And he said by the time the 90s hit, there were fewer potential criminals because abortion was passed. Now, this is not, you know, necessarily my position on anything. The point is that if Freakonomics made that video and put it on YouTube, it's gone. It's out the door in a second. There is no way that video stands. And he's trying to look at a big public policy problem, violent crime, and link it to what's going on in the world so that he can explain what's happening with it. Now, his theory about abortion being related to it, that may or may not stand. I'm not an expert on it, so I don't know. But what happens to that video if he uploads it on YouTube? Is anybody going to see it the way literally millions and millions of people read Freakonomics and launched the Freakonomics blog and their podcast? I mean, it's an empire now that gets people to consider the world in a new way. This is a very positive thing. But had that popped today, like literally this day in August on YouTube, it is gone. That's nuts. That's absolutely insane to me.
And I think that was Nerd City's exact point in speaking about Coffee Breaks video being the type of content that YouTube should celebrate, because like I understand from YouTube, like one of the things that YouTube is really trying to clamp down on are conspiracy theories. They make a huge big deal out of this because they feel like, you know, misinforming people, like purposefully misinforming people is dangerous or could potentially be dangerous in a way that's just not something that they want to be a part of and to really allow to flourish on the platform. So on one hand, I understand that they don't want tons of like anti-vax videos to be super popular and all of a sudden all these children are having like measles outbreaks. Right. But on the other hand, if there's no room for a Freakonomics style piece of content or a Coffee Break piece of content, then I don't know. There's a huge trade-off there. There's a huge trade-off there. And I don't know how that gets solved. Because, look, on one hand, yes, there is a gigantic amount of content that YouTube has to be responsible for. But on the other hand, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong about this, there's not that many, it's not like an impossible to understand or manage amount of people on the level of a Coffee Break, right?
No, there's really not.
There's just not.
No, and we know what ad revenue is like, okay? I mean, we know the numbers behind it. It's not like you get a million views on a video and you become a millionaire. We know it's not that. But there's enough ad money coming into these videos that would pay a very nice salary for a massive amount of people to sit there and literally like watch the video like a human being and actually engage a brain cell or two with when you're talking the creators who have the 100 to 300,000 subs and beyond, or even 10,000. There's not that much content relative to the amount of money that's coming in on the ad side. It wouldn't be the greatest wage in the world, but it would be worth your time. And again, you've got a judgment call. I mean, every human's, you know, some people are going to blow it. But you could even have a two-tiered review system so that two people have to agree that there's a problem here. I know that they claim to manually review things. There's just no way that a thinking human being looks at some of these videos and thinks, this is not suitable for all advertisers. It's nuts. It's wrong. It doesn't work that way. And I'd love to see a more human approach to it all, even if it's expensive, because the really expensive thing is having good, serious content creators or great entertainers. I mean, it's not like everybody has to be a video essayist. I love, absurd, idiotic comedy. But you don't want to put those people off. You don't want to stifle their chances of putting content out there, because when you do that, then the platform as a whole gets a little less appealing and a little less appealing. And when those really talented people jump somewhere else, that's a game changer when it happens in a critical mass, you know? So I'm really worried about the direction that things are going when I see a video like Coffee Breaks that has every reason to be at the top of recommended. It has every reason to be trending because it's such a smart video, well-researched. And not only does that not happen, but the exact opposite happens, and it is jammed down into like the corner of the dumpster that you can never get clean, where there's like green sludge and it's like buildup. That's never getting clean. That's where that video sits right now.
Yeah. Well, do you think, though, that, you know, it's even possible? And I know this question comes up all the time, and other companies have tried to do it, but will there be a time where there actually is a competitor to YouTube? I don't know. It doesn't seem like it. It just seems like that's never going to happen.
I don't know. There's nothing that's on the horizon that's really worth getting excited about. But it's so hard to think in those terms, for me at least, when we know all these people who are being affected, whether it's you with, thankfully, what amounted to a minor annoyance that got fixed in a day or two, which, I mean, that happened because you've been around a long time. It's easier for you to reach out than it is for a lot of creators. Thankfully, you had that resource. Not so many do, but we know, you know, whether it's that minor annoyance to something like a total shutdown, and we know some of these people. And when we see it happen, we're confused, we're frustrated. We try to do what we can, whether it's a public campaign kind of thing or it's leveraging whatever resources we have with the people we know, but it's a day-to-day thing. It's an everyday problem. So everybody's talking about an alternative. You know, what's going to replace YouTube in 2022? And I'm like, who's going to get to 2022? You know, I like, which one of my boys is next? I don't know.
I don't know either. But it seems to be getting worse. That's my take on it.
It's worse.
Seems to be getting worse. I think maybe it's getting worse so that it can get better. But I just, you know, going back to the beginning of this conversation, I don't see how it is possible to predict and analyze intent. I don't know how you train an algorithm to understand intent. Like maybe in Coffee Break situation with the smoking thing, sure, maybe they can figure out like, hey, this is like an informative thing. And it's not like, you know, Gracie Smoker 28, latest review of Camel Ultra Cool 2000. But it seems to me like that's certainly possible. But the other thing that bothers me is how much restriction on YouTube there is that seems to me harsher than what you see on television.
Oh yeah.
Like we're at a point where, wait, like TV can get away with more than I can get away with on YouTube. That that does not seem right at all. Like, it was supposed, the whole point of YouTube is supposed to be like freedom from the strictures of old media. And it was this new frontier. And you have, you know, like Max Mofo jamming like turkeys on his hands and like being weird, and millions of people loved it. Yeah. And, you know, anything for views, dressed up as Donkey Kong, getting flaming barrels thrown at him, and everybody rejoiced that this was like free media. And now it's like, wait, we're getting worse than TV. And like, you know, Max and Chad can't even get their podcast monetized.
No, they have really limited options. And I mean, they certainly say the occasional thing that isn't family friendly. But I think, you know, as you were talking about this, about the TV comparison, I was thinking, when I go back to the 90s again, there's a show called NYPD Blue, which I never watched because I wasn't, you know, into like cop dramas. It's very much like Blue Bloods, if anybody watches that now. But standard crime, you know, Law and Order kind of thing. Anyway, there's a guy named Dennis Franz. And before I say what's important about this, we need to establish that Dennis Franz is not hot. Okay. Dennis Franz, okay. Not only is he I don't know if he's still alive or not. If he is, he's probably still not hot. Okay. But there is a scene, this was about 20 years ago, where
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if he gets out of the shower or like what the context is, but it shows his bare butt. Okay. And that was a big deal because it was on a major network. It wasn't HBO. It was like ABC or NBC or CBS or something. And it was okay. So now I guess we're showing butts on the big network TV. Well,
yeah,
and again, it was a butt that few people wanted to see, which made it doubly confusing. But 20 years ago, we got butts.
But it was
on
a
TV.
Really big deal. It was a huge deal. It was like the entire country screeched to a halt. It's so absurd thinking about now, but it was like everybody was talking about this lewd program called NYPD Blue that was just salacious and offensive because it showed a man's butt.
Yeah. And he's just like a 45-year-old regular guy, you know, bald, like he's just a cop in the show. You know, it wasn't some big reveal where everybody's been waiting to see his butt. No, it was just some plot point, and they thought that it made artistic sense to include this realistic scene. And they did it, and everybody freaked out. But that was 20 years ago. We got butts on TV, and what can you do now? You know, that network didn't get all of its sponsors and commercials pulled, as far as I know. I mean, NYPD Blue continued to be a thing.
And they probably got some new sponsors from like Fruit of the Loom and Haynes.
Preparation H, huh? So
gross.
I really hate myself, and Dave needs to edit that out. So anyway, you can't pull that. I mean, what would happen to Vsauce 2 if you just like dropped your pants in the middle of an episode and everybody saw what very few people should see in this world? It wouldn't go over well.
I don't think
it
would go over too well. No, I don't think it would go over too well. And I think that's a great example. And it seems to me like YouTube is getting more strict because there is this overwhelming connotation from the advertisers that YouTube is just this unregulated like landscape of content, and you'll never know what your ad is running up against. So, you know, it could be butts, it could be, you know, vile violent things or political things or whatever. And YouTube's response to that is like, okay, since you don't really know what your ads are going to run against, we're going to start just being extra cautious about that, more so than even broadcast television would be.
That goes back to our conversation months ago with Casey Neistat about that brand sensitivity in advertising and content and how it all plays with each other into our reality. It's important stuff, and I'm totally sensitive to that, where if I had a brand and I was paying really good money to advertise on YouTube, I don't want it on certain videos. I mean, it's just, I totally get it. But the balance that needs to happen does not seem to be there. And I know that now creators can choose certain types of categories of ads that they don't want on there. So they've gotten a little bit of control, where if you don't want to have, I forget what the categories are because I haven't looked at them in a while, but I don't know if it's for like game video games or something like that. If you don't want video game ads running on your channel, you can uncheck that category and that won't happen. So that's a baby step in terms of matching up content with advertisers. But I mean, that's a mile away from the actual problem. I don't see what the next useful step is going to be, because it's such a big gap that I'm going to reinforce what you said. You cannot write code that's going to fix this. That is not going to happen right now.
No, but you know what I was just thinking might be an interesting next step, and I'm surprised this hasn't happened yet, is companies kind of buying YouTubers in a way, like buying a channel. Like, I'm surprised that like a Disney or a Viacom or a Comcast hasn't come in, or even smaller broadcasting. I mean, those are like the giants, but even smaller, like local, I don't know, smaller production companies haven't come in and say like, hey, Coffee Break or, you know, Gus Johnson. Like, imagine if Viacom came in and said, I mean, Gus has been doing, he's a pretty good example here. So Gus has been doing work with, if you're not familiar with Gus Johnson, you need to rectify that immediately and subscribe to Gus Johnson on YouTube and follow Gus on Twitter. You will not regret it. He's one of the funniest people on the internet without question. So he has been doing a little bit of freelance work with Comedy Central, I've noticed, where, you know, he's doing just short videos with Comedy Central. But my proposition here is, at what point does Comedy Central or Comedy Central's parent company, whoever it is, Viacom, it might be, Turner, I don't know. At what point do they come in and say like, hey, you know, Gus, you are one of the funniest people on the internet. We'll give you a salary. Like, we'll buy your channel. We'll pay you a salary to make, you know, X number of videos a month, and we'll give you health insurance. And go to town, you know, we'll get advertising. We'll take care of like running ads and doing sponsorships because we have those connections. Why isn't that happening? And do you think it will?
I don't know. I've wondered about that on the brand advertising side, because I look at certain brand deals and know what the amount is relative to the expectations for the brand, basically how much money they're paying for a certain amount of views. And I look at that and I think, if you use that money for a portion of a salary of a team, you know, this would cover, you know, let's say 3 weeks of like a two or three person team. What could they do in those 3 weeks? How many videos could they make about the exact thing you're trying to advertise, or, you know, something tangential to it, or a really cool thing that a company just happens to have an interest in? I do look at that and think, why don't you just have a production team instead of selling on these other things? You know, obviously it's about hitting different audiences and metrics and demographics and all that stuff. So it's useful to advertise. But yeah, that what you're suggesting hasn't happened nearly as often as I thought it would. I figured that a bunch of channels would get picked up by now. The ones or the people or channels who are hyper focused in a niche, and this wouldn't happen, but it illustrates my point. You know, there are people who are obsessed with Apple and Mac. You know, there were people like iJustine who have just been like Mac fan, hyper fans forever. You know, why couldn't you just make them a staffer, basically, you know, and support them and get the content out? I don't think it would happen with Apple, but it's totally viable that it could happen with a lot of other brands where just anything that's in a certain niche, somebody within that niche could say, okay, this is really good stuff. It would help us. It would help you. We'd love to acquire you and make your stuff, you know, give it a foundation for you to continue.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It hasn't really happened. It's kind of one-off sponsorships and some long-term relationships.
Yeah, like I think of, like, as we're having this discussion, I'm thinking of tech channels. Mm-hmm. You know, tech channels like Austin Evans or Marcus Brownlee, even Unbox Therapy to a degree. I can't believe a company like Best Buy wouldn't come in and say, like, hey, Marquez, dude, you know, you are the best phone reviewer in the world. How about, here's an idea. Like, we pay you. Maybe they can't afford him. I don't know. Maybe I'm like talking out of term here, and they would never be able to afford to pay Marquez an amount of money that, you know, he would be interested in, but I'm just thinking, like, why wouldn't they suggest something like that, where it's like, okay, every phone that you review, and you're free to review them however you wish, you know, we won't, we will not tell you how to review a phone, but if somebody wants to buy it, you put the link to the Best Buy page where they can buy the iPhone, and you say, hey, you want the iPhone 11? Get it at Best Buy, you know, for this deal or whatever, free trade, whatever it is. That's just one example, but it seems like there is a gigantic opportunity, almost like the music industry, where, you know, a record label signs an artist and they sign, you know, like U2 or Katy Perry to like a 6-album contract, and for the next 6 albums you have to make 6 albums for, you know, Columbia Records. That nothing like that exists in the creator space as of yet.
I think some people have talked about it and tried to work things out, but I think there'll come a time where there's kind of an equilibrium on sponsorship values where that makes more sense. And also a style developing too, where those reviewers can have a relationship like that without it appearing it to be a very biased thing. It's totally possible where it's something like, hey, this phone sucks, but if you want to buy it, here's your Best Buy link. You could do it with a retail outlet, but yeah, it would be tough to strike a balance where people were absolutely convinced. I mean, you know, the pushback that we ourselves got from doing a Patreon, there's a percentage of people who see that kind of thing as just being terrible. You know, imagine if you're trying to get people to, or if a retail outfit is trying to have production, have produced media come out and then saying, oh, by the way, spend a bunch of money here. wow, the criticism that would come out from anybody who disagreed with a view, with a review, would be like, you're obviously saying this terrible phone is great so that Best Buy can sell more phones. Like, it would get messy, messy. But I think some people will be able to step up and develop a style where the brand can benefit, people can benefit, and there's like an unassailable sense of trust that goes in. I think that's possible.
Yeah, because this already is a criticism in the video game review world, mm-hmm. that sites that review video games face all the time, because they have to deal with these publishers, yep. and these developers who essentially, like, their games and talking about their games is the website's business.
Right.
So coming out and like trashing some company's brand new AAA title that they spent 5 or 6 years developing and, you know, millions of dollars. And then, you know, Joe Schmo on IGN or GameSpot or whatever gives it a 4 out of 10. Like, that really hurts their relationship with the developer. But meanwhile, they have a relationship with the review or the reader. So, I mean, that dynamic definitely already exists. And I just feel like, to wrap up like this whole discussion about the future of YouTube and all of the restrictions that are going on, that there may have to be some sort of give like that, where, you know, channels are supported potentially by brands and by media companies in a way that we're not used to today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll see if that hits harder than the grassroots community based support for channels, which is really good because you retain all the freedom. Plus, by default, you're giving people what they enjoy. It'll be tough to improve on that model. And what you just said about trashing somebody, what or who are we going to trash in the members only extended feed of this show? That's what I want to know, is who do we get to trash in review poorly?
I think ourselves, because actually, James from the Baby Gang wants to hear more personal stories about the two of us.
Okay.
And because, you know, you and I have known each other for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And so he wants to hear more personal stories about our friendship over the years and how that's developed. So that's what we're going to get into. But in order to hear that, in order to continue to listen, you need to go to patreon.com/thecreateunknown, where we'll be continuing the conversation mm-hmm. over there. And if not, that's okay too. Because you know what? Thank you so much for listening to The Create Unknown, mm-hmm. because you're special. And not in like a weird way, but in a beautiful way. This is just—it's getting worse.
Yes,
words just come out at this point.
I
wish they weren't. I wish they wouldn't. I wish they wouldn't.
I don't know how to describe the feeling I just got, because it's not quite a pit in my stomach, but it's more like I've got to go to the bathroom. I think it's that kind of feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what's that mythical note, that like really low note that makes you crap your pants?
The brown note. I think you almost hit the brown note just now.
Yeah. So on that brown note, see you, Space Cowboys.
Oh my God.
Thanks for listening to The Create Unknown. You can unlock the rest of this episode by signing up at patreon.com/thecreateunknown. And if you do it right now, you'll get the rest of August 2019 for free. As long as right now is still August of 2019. If it's not, are there laser beams and dinosaurs where you live in the future? Anyway, you'll get to hear the rest of our conversation, as well as unlock the ad-free RSS feed, get exclusive content, join the Idea Baby Gang, and much, much more. So fully enter the Create Unknown by going to patreon.com/thecreateunknown. Once again, this episode was brought to you by Audible. Pick up your free audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/thecreateunknown. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thecreateunknown. Do it. Your brain and your ears will thank you. Thanks for listening to The Create Unknown. If you liked what you heard, and I certainly hope that you did, please subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast and leave us a review on Podchaser and Apple Podcasts. Those reviews really go a long way. While you're at it, you can also watch the video version of this show on youtube.com/thecreateunknown. Check out our Patreon. It's patreon.com/thecreateunknown. You can get the full episode. You can join the Idea Baby Gang, become one of the known, access creator services. There's a lot going on our Patreon. It's all part of phase 3 of TCU. So go to patreon.com/thecreateunknown. Follow us on social media. We tweet at CreateUnknown. We're on Facebook and Instagram at TheCreateUnknown. You can follow me, Matt, and the show on Podchaser for podcast updates. You can also find a link to our Discord in the show notes. We love our Discord because we get to talk to you, and you get to talk to us. So join our Discord. Our website is thecreateunknown.com. The Create Unknown is an Unknown Media production. We've been your hosts, Kevin Lieber and Matt Tabor. Check out what we do on YouTube at Vsauce2 and on Twitter at KevLieb and TaborTCU. Links in the show notes. Executive producer is Dave Kiney. Our theme song is by the incredible Mega Drive. Special thanks to Paula Lieber, Mo Lewitt, and Dorothy Kiney. Until next time, see ya, Space Cowboys. Patreon.com/thecreateunknown. It's like an elephant for your ears. That makes no sense.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.